Today's scripture reading comes from the book of Daniel, chapter 10, verses 1 through 19, and can be found on page 634 of your pew Bible. Daniel, chapter 10, verses 1 through 19. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. Its message was true, and it concerned a great war. The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. At that time I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat or wine touched my lips, and I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen, with a belt of the finest gold around his waist. His body was like crystal light, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. The men with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale, and I was helpless. Then I heard him speaking, and as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. A hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said, "Daniel, you who are highly esteemed, consider carefully the words I am about to speak to you, and stand up, for I have now been sent to you." And when he said this to me, I stood up trembling. Then he continued, "Do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come." While he was saying this to me, I bowed with my face toward the ground and was speechless. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and began to speak. I said to the one standing before me, "I am overcome with anguish because of the vision, my lord, and I am helpless. How can I, your servant, talk with you, my lord? My strength is gone, and I can hardly breathe." Again the one who looked like a man touched me and gave me strength. "Do not be afraid, O man highly esteemed," he said. "Peace, be strong now, be strong." When he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, "Speak, my Lord, since you have given me strength." May God bless the reading of his word.
So I wonder whether you saw the article this week about jerks in the workplace. Now, it was the AP article and it hit a lot of the presses. Now, the article has two important features to it. One is how they define what a jerk is, and then what the effect of being a jerk in the workplace is. So how they define a jerk? Basically, it's a personality that's aggressive and combative. Maybe even rude. So they did a literature survey. 20 years of studies of people who are combative and aggressive, even rude in the workplace. And what did they find out? If you're a man and you're combative and aggressive, then likely your average salary is about 10% higher than the nice guys. Now, women are allowed to be nice, so their penalty is only about 2%. But men will basically gain about $10,000 a year on average, if they're combative and hostile. And women will gain a couple $1,000s a year. Now, there's some good news in this. Well, hopefully there's some bad news. Hopefully the bad news is a lot of you are making $10,000 less than what you could be making. The good news is if you're not making as much money as you wish, you can just say, well, that's because you're a nice guy. Now, this actually provides a lead-in to the passage today. Because notice the attributes of these jerks, or what they call a jerk. Aggressive, combative, even rude. Now, as we look at Daniel, I want to make the point, the obvious is that God is not a jerk. But why is he not a jerk? You see, you look at Daniel, and Daniel 10 is making two basic points about God. One is, you could argue that God is aggressive and combative. That's not what keeps him from being a jerk. What keeps God from being a jerk is that he's not rude, he's kindly. And as we look into Daniel 10, what we're going to see about God is these two traits. He's dominant, he's aggressive, he's powerful, he's combative. And yet at the same time, he's kindly. So turn with me, page 634 in your pew Bible. Now, page 634, Daniel 10. Basically, what I want to show you from Daniel 10 is that Daniel makes this point about God seven times. And then we want to look at, why does he make this point? I want to show you that he makes the point seven times. And then we want to ask, why does he make this point about God seven times? So first, to demonstrate his point. Beginning in chapter 10, verse 7. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen. An angel, really. This is an angel. This is not, Daniel did not have a vision of God. He had a vision of an angel. And I want to explain this for just a moment, because I'm going to take this as a vision of God. Here's the thing. The Old Testament concept was of great distance between man and God. You really couldn't see. Moses saw God, maybe. He saw the backside of God. You know, he saw God from reverse. But people couldn't see God. There was a huge distance. So if God wanted to communicate directly with man, what he did was send an angel. So as we look at this passage and what it tells us about the angel of God, really, as the angel is God's representative, what it's telling us about the angel of God, it's telling us even more about God himself. Okay? I looked, and there before me was a man dressed in linen, an angel. He had a belt of the finest gold around his waist. His body was like chrysolite. His face was like lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. His arms and legs are like the gleam of burnished bronze. His voice was like the sound of a multitude. This is an intimidating, aggressive, dominant creature in front of him. And now Daniel goes through seven stages of his reaction to this creature, this angel, God in effect. First stage, Daniel 10, verse 7. I was the only one who saw the vision. The men with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and they hid themselves. Stage 1, only Daniel sees it, but everyone who doesn't see it, they know something's going on and it scares them. And these grown men run away from God because of his power. He's too frightful. Stage 2, Daniel says, verses 8 and 9. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale. I was helpless. And then I heard him speaking. And as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. Stage 1, people who couldn't even see the vision fled for their lives. Stage 2, Daniel drops into a coma. Stage 3, verse 10. A hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. You see, still, stage 3, still the fear of God. Still God is awesome and great and mighty. Daniel is still trembling before God. The most he can do is make it to his hands and knees. And yet here we see the second side of God creeping in. God's kindness. God reached out and touched him. God assured him he didn't have to be afraid. He could raise up off the ground, come out of his coma onto his hands and knees, and still he's on his hands and knees, trembling. Stage 4, verse 11. The angel said, Daniel, you are highly esteemed. Consider carefully the words I'm about to speak to you and stand up, for now I have been sent to you. Now you see again how kindly God is. There's Daniel on his hands and knees before God, trembling, and God says, no, stand up. But God is still fearsome and frightening. When the angel said this to me, I stood up, trembling. Stage 5, verses 12 and verse 15, verse 12 and 15. And the angel continued, don't be afraid, Daniel. You see God's kindness. Don't be afraid. And while he was saying this to me, I bowed with my face toward the ground and was speechless. You see God's fearsomeness still, that Daniel was afraid, even exhorted to stand up. He was afraid to look at God, or to look at the angel face to face. He was still afraid. He was speechless. He bowed his head to the ground. Stage 6, verse 16 and 17. The one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and I began to speak. And I said to the one standing before me, I'm overcome with anguish because of the vision, my Lord, and I'm helpless. How can I, your servant, talk with you, my Lord? My strength is gone. I can hardly breathe. So Daniel fell into a coma. He got to his hands and knees, and he's shaking. He stands up, he's shaking. And then he speaks to the angel. He says, how can I even talk with you? I'm afraid just to see you. My strength is gone. I can hardly breathe. And then stage 7, verse 19. The angel says, don't be afraid, O highly esteemed. Peace. Be strong now. Be strong. And finally now, Daniel is able to be strong before the Lord. When he spoke to me, I was strengthened, and I said, speak, my Lord, since you have given me strength. It took this 7-stage process for Daniel to come to terms with the awesome power and majesty and dominance of God. And it took 5 interventions from God for Daniel to come to terms with this vision of himself, so that he could at least have a conversation, listen to the angel without shaking in fear. So here we have 2 attributes of God throughout this chapter, repeated 7 times. God's awesome, fierce, frightening power. And God's kindness toward his people. Now the question is this just the Old Testament? The book of Daniel forms some of the background to the book of Revelation at the end of the New Testament. And in Revelation, as in Daniel, in Revelation, the author of Revelation, John the Apostle, has a vision of God. And what happens to John when he has this vision of Christ, in fact? Among the lampstands was someone like a son of man. You see how he's quoting? He's alluding to Daniel. I had a vision of one like a son of man. Daniel had a vision of one like a son of man. And when I saw him, Revelation chapter 1, I fell at his feet as though dead. So Daniel has a vision of the angel and he falls down as though dead. And John has a vision of Jesus and he falls down as dead. You see, we still have in the New Testament, even for an apostle, the awesome power, majesty, combativeness, aggression of God himself. And then Jesus placed his right hand on me and he said, don't be afraid. I'm the first and the last. So we have these 2 attributes of God throughout Daniel 10 and in Revelation 1. The 2 attributes of God in the Old Testament and in the New. God is frightening. God is awe-inspiring. God is someone we cannot stand up to. And yet we have the kindness of God. Now the question is, if that's the point, and that's really the core point of Daniel 10, why does Daniel spend an entire chapter doing this? Why does he spend an entire chapter making this point? You know, first, there's an appearance of the angel, and others flee, and then Daniel's in a coma, and then Daniel's on his knees shaking, then Daniel stands shaking, and then Daniel bows to the ground, and then Daniel can scarcely breathe, and finally Daniel is strengthened. Why such a long process to make this point? Why make it 7 times? Why spend a whole chapter on it? Now take a look at Daniel chapter 10, verse 1. Daniel explains a little bit of his context. Daniel chapter 10 to 12, 3 chapters form 1 vision. And next week we'll look at the content of the vision. But in this week's chapter, Daniel doesn't get into the content of the vision. We don't hear what the angel says. All we do is we meet the angel. Daniel spends a whole chapter meeting the angel. Why a whole chapter? The real point of a vision is what the angel is going to say in chapter 11. Why a whole chapter on meeting this angel? What's the point? You know, every other time that Daniel had a vision, Daniel saw an angel. And then we go into the content of the vision. Now suddenly suddenly a whole chapter, a seven-step process as Daniel meets this angel. Why this emphasis? Chapter 10, verse 1 sets the timing, the chronology, and the mood. Chapter 10, verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel. This doesn't tell us the year. It tells us something about the mood. The third year, king of Cyrus, a vision comes to Daniel. The third year, the king of Cyrus. The first year of the king of Cyrus, Israel was allowed out of exile. They came back to their land. And they were told they would go back to the land, they could build their temple, they could build the city walls, they could reestablish their country. The first year was a time of great excitement. And then if you look at the book of Ezra, by the second year, by the third year, there were already people in Palestine. When Israel was brought out of exile, other people came in, like Palestinians today. And as Israel came back to the land, as it came back in the 40s, then the people that were there were opposed to them. So God had sent them back. Cyrus had allowed them back in his first year. And by the third year, they had started building the temple, and it was a wimpy little building. And they started rebuilding the city, and they tried to put up walls, and the people that were living in the land then opposed it. And finally, a new emperor said, stop. So they were in a very discouraged space, a very discouraged mood in the third year of King Cyrus. Would they ever be able to rebuild their temple and worship their God? Would they ever be able to live in safety from their neighbors? Would they ever be prosperous again? They thought God had promised them, and it looked like in the first year of King Cyrus that they had achieved that goal. They were right on the cusp of it. But by the third year, they thought, there is no hope. There's terrible discouragement. Only it gets worse. Daniel has this revelation, and in the second half of verse 1, we read, its message was true, and it concerned a great war. Now, we'll look at it next week in Daniel 11, but here's the message of the angel to these people who are discouraged. Their economy is bad, their times are hard, they're struggling because of this opposition. They want to build, they had great hope, and now their hopes are dashed. And in the midst of that dashed hope, Daniel has a vision, and his vision is this. It's a vision of a great war. And we'll see, just to anticipate, Daniel 11. Israel comes back to the land, and Palestine is now a land bridge. There's a great superpower to the north, first Babylon, and then Persia, and then Syria. But there's a series of superpowers to the north of Israel. And there's a superpower to the south of Israel, Egypt. And you know what happens when there's two superpowers in the world. We saw that until the 90s. When there's two superpowers in the world, they jockey for position to see who's the strongest. And the kingdom of the north would invade to attack the south, kingdom of the south. And the kingdom of the south would respond with an invasion to attack the kingdom of the north. And they would back and forth and back and forth. And Daniel 11 says they'll be fighting back and forth for 490 years. So here's a country, here's a people discouraged. And God says to them through this vision, oh, it's going to get worse. Because for 500 years, you're going to be in the middle of a conflict between these two kingdoms. And the armies, to get to one, for one to get to the other, for the north to come south, for the south to come north, they're going to have to go through Israel. And as they go through, they're going to take the crops, they're going to harass the people. For 500 years, they are going to struggle. And there's a worse feature to it all than that. Not only are they going to struggle against human foes, they're also going to struggle against spiritual foes, because chapter 10, verses 12 to 13 tell us this. The angel who comes to Daniel says, the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me for 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. And now I've come to explain to you. We won't go into a great deal of detail about this, but here king and prince is a reference to actually spirit beings. The angel says to Daniel, look, you started praying 3 weeks ago. You prayed and fasted for 3 weeks. I heard you that first day, and I tried to come to see you, but my hands were full. I was locked in combat with the angelic beings over the Persia. You know, this great superpower is not just an earthly superpower. It has a supporting angel, a demon. And the angel talking to Daniel says, I was fighting him. I was holding him off. And I couldn't get free from him until Michael came and helped me out. And Michael's the archangel. So I needed this mega archangel to help me so I could get free to come and answer your prayer, tell you about the vision. So what Daniel tells his people, the context they're facing is this. Already life is hard. Then for the next 500 years, it's going to be very difficult. Not only will they have human forces opposing them, they'll have spiritual forces opposing them. And in that context, what hope does he offer them? Think about our situation. What kind of hope we would ask for. There's a famous pastor of a previous generation called Robert Schuller, great motivational speaker, built up a huge church in California. Robert Schuller had a famous talk once entitled, Tough Times Never Last, Tough People Do. And he published this sermon, and basically the context of it was this. He had grown up in the Depression, in the Dust Bowl in the Midwest, when all the farms were being devastated. And then in the 60s, he was asked to speak to some farmers who were going through a drought and very tough time. So he told about it, the time from his own childhood, when the farms were being closed up and people were just packing up, leaving their homes behind, leaving their farms behind, and heading out to California because the Dust Bowl, they couldn't survive. And the message he brought to those farmers in the 60s, as they faced drought and as they faced bankruptcy, the message he brought to them was this. A message of optimism, because Robert Schuller was nothing if not a great optimist. His message was this. We saw in the Depression, we saw in the Dust Bowl, he said, tough times never last. Tough people do. And this is the hope that people were looking for as they in the midst of their suffering. They were looking for optimism. These tough times won't last forever. It will get better. And this is the American gospel. Tough times won't last. If you just endure, it'll get better. But Daniel says, times are tough now. And for the next 500 years, they're going to get worse. They're not going to get better. If this is what God is saying through the angel, what hope can Daniel give his people? And the hope that he gives them is a vision of God. And he's saying to them two things about God. This God is tough. This God is powerful. This God is fearsome. This God is frightening. But he says to them, this God is kindly. What hope is he offering them in their suffering, in their difficult situation? This is the only hope he's offering them. Saying, as you look at these kingdoms of the north, as you look at this kingdom of the south, as one invades to attack your neighbor, and as the other invades back, and as you get jockeyed back and forth, as one invader after another, he said, Daniel's point is this. The angel's point is this. It would be easy to think that your fate and your life is in the hands of this kingdom of the north. It would be easy to think that power really rests with this kingdom of the south. It would be really easy to think that these are the powers that matter in the world. And the angel opens up the door of heaven just a little bit, or Daniel opens up the door of heaven through the angel to God and says, no, these are not the powers that matter. The real power in the world is not this superpower to the north. It's not this superpower to the south. The real power in the world is this one, this God. And this God is so powerful and so majestic and so intimidating that you can't even stand before his angel. You fall in a coma. He is so powerful and so strong and so intimidating that even when he touches you, all you can do is get your knees and shake. This God is so powerful and so strong and so mighty that if he tells you to stand, you stand and you shiver in his presence. This God is so strong and so powerful and mighty that when he invites you to speak, you're breathless. You can't get the breath to speak. And yet, this God, who is so strong and so powerful and mighty, he is kindly toward you. So throughout Daniel chapter 10, what we see is the great power of God and yet the kindliness of God. And what Daniel is telling a people who are going through suffering and who are going to go through worse suffering, what he's telling them is, this is the real power, and you've already made peace with the real power. All this other stuff is secondary. The crucial issue has been settled. Your future is secure, even if your present is difficult, because you have made peace. You have made peace with the real power that exists in the universe. Daniel doesn't tell them their life is going to get easier. Daniel tells them they have 5 centuries of hardship coming. But he tells them this. Those 5 centuries of hardship need not shake you. They need not cause you fear. They need not overwhelm you. Because God is with you, and he's far more powerful than all these. That's the message of Daniel 10. And that's why Daniel 10 spends a whole chapter reassuring the people before he opens the window and shows them the suffering that's coming. He spends a whole chapter saying, what you're about to see is scary. Oh, but this God is far more powerful than anything you're going to see there. And he's on your side. That's his message of hope. Not that tough times never last. What tough people do. But that God is tougher and bigger and stronger than all this. And he will look after you. He's on your side. So Daniel had one takeaway. Let me propose for today that we need to have 2 takeaways. The first takeaway we take from this passage is the same one that Daniel gave his congregation, his audience. You know, we've been through a dot-com bubble burst. We've been through a bank toxic mortgage burst. We're going through a housing value bubble burst. And those of us who own homes have a lot less assets than we used to have. And this week there were reports in the newspaper that the question now is, will we also go through a stock market bubble burst? Now, I'm not an economist. I had only 2 classes in econs in college, macro and micro. But I have invested in the stock market. And let me tell you what's happened. Not recently, but I got into the stock market late for my generation. I mean, I was a missionary. I had no money. But my poor grandmother died and left me $8,000. So in 1988, I invested $8,000 in the stock market with some professional advice. But even then, I was scared because at that point, 1988, 1989, the stock market was at record highs. And people were already predicting it was going to go down. Because look, they said, the stock market is climbing higher and higher. This is a bubble because the price earnings ratio is not increasing. Only the cost of the stocks is increasing. This is hopeless. This is going to go down. But what am I going to do? I stick the money in the bank. I get hardly any interest. So I took a risk. And I put my money in the stock market, 1988. And the stock market at that point, the Dow Jones average was 4,000 points. Never been higher. Ridiculously high. Unsustainably high. Now, what do you think? Do you think the price-earnings ratio has tripled or more than tripled since 1988? I don't think so. Do you think this stock market is overvalued? Oh, who knows? It could be argued. Not only have we seen one bubble burst after another, but there may be a bigger bubble bursting. We don't know. Where do we put our hope? Our lives are so much easier than Daniel's generation. And our lives are going to continue to be easier. But that doesn't really much matter, because what I'm looking at is whether my life is going to be easier in the future than it really is right now, or than it was 10 years ago, or than it was for my parents. And there's a good chance that things are going to be unstable for a long time. What is our hope in that? What does Daniel 10 offer us? Daniel 10 doesn't come and tell us tough times never last, but tough people do. Daniel 10 comes and tells us, yeah, maybe. Maybe there's going to be a bubble burst. And maybe people my age aren't going to be able to retire until they're 70, 75, or until they die, you know. Maybe. But what Daniel 10 says is this. If you've come to meet God, if you have come to know God, then here's the thing. You have met the most powerful, intimidating, frightening force in this world. And you've made peace with him. So all this other stuff can be hard, but it's not overwhelming. The big issue's been settled. All this other stuff is a little issue. That's the promise of Daniel 10. Now I think we need one more lesson, though, from Daniel 10. We kind of need the inverse. And it takes us back to the first story about the penalty on nice people. Because if you're nice at work, the chances are, if you're a man, you're going to make $10,000 a year less. And if you're a woman, you're going to make $2,000 a year less, because women aren't expected to be rude and obnoxious at work. They're allowed to be nice. So the penalty for being nice is lower if you're a woman than if you're a man. You know, I think there's a certain penalty that God pays for being kindly toward us as well. It's not just us that pays a penalty at work. I would suppose God pays that same penalty. Because God generally doesn't come to us as this fearsome, awesome being who throws us down into a coma, or throws us shaking on our knees, or renders us speechless. He comes to us as a kindly God. And he pays a penalty. Because we take him for granted. Or can. You know, it's easy enough to assume, well, we'll get through it. You know, yeah, I walk away from God. Or yeah, I'm rude to God. Or yeah, I fall into sin. But it's okay. You know, God's kindly. If he were a Canaanite God, if he required me to sacrifice my children to get his pleasure, then maybe I'd take him seriously. But you see, unlike the Canaanite God, God doesn't say sacrifice your children to honor me. God doesn't say sacrifice your children. God says, I sacrifice my son for you. So he's paid the ultimate kindly price. And the danger is that in the midst of that, in the context of that, we could take the word grace and we could distort it. Instead of grace being God sent his son for us, grace could mean I can live however way I want and God's going to overlook it. And so maybe we need both points from Daniel. Daniel knew God was fearsome and awesome and frightening. And he needed to hear that God was kindly. And maybe that, and that's certainly a legitimate message today. God is kindly. We've made peace with the most powerful force in the universe. Our future is secure. We can get through the rest of it because God's on our side. But maybe we need to hear the other part too. God is kindly. And he's paid a penalty for being kind. He gave his son. But there's a limit to the penalty God's willing to pay. And God is still fearsome. And God is still awesome. And God is still the kind of being that doesn't look on sin kindly. God is still the kind of being that when we appear before him, we fall down and we tremble before him. This, for us, would be the two messages of Daniel. For those who fear the future, the promise of Daniel is this. The most frightening thing in anybody's future, you've already resolved. You're ready to face the final judgment. You're ready to meet God. If you fear the future, there is no need. Nothing you face will be worse than what you've already conquered. But for those who don't fear God, the message of Daniel 10 is, the message of Revelation 1 is, this God is still awesome and powerful and frightening. It is not to be taken for granted. Let's pray together. Father, we celebrate your great power. But we also celebrate your great kindness. We ask that by your grace, through your word, by your spirit, both of these realities might shape our lives. That whatever happens with our economy, that whatever happens with our lives, that we might be able to take comfort in this. That we have faced the greatest power. And we've come through unscathed. Not because of our goodness, but because of your kindness. May this govern our lives as we face an uncertain future. We ask for your grace, your spirit,